From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last night when Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren announced that she is seeking re-election this year. She made the announcement to an overflow crowd at Brew Coffee in the 19th Ward, pretty close to where she grew up. Mayor Warren says she expects a tough fight, but she's used to that, and there are echoes of the election from 4 years ago. She says she's ready. This hour, it's our chance to discuss her record on the economy, poverty, education, public safety, and more. And we'll look ahead to what the next 4 years could be like under Mayor Warren. So let's get to it. And we're also on Facebook Live on our WXXI News page, so hello on Facebook Live. Mayor Lovely Warren, welcome back to Connections.
Thank you, Evan.
Well, during your announcement last night, you pointed out that you're ready for a fight here, and that some of the same divisions that rocked the party 4 years ago and that have been sort of splintering the party for years are still there. You feel that way?
Oh, absolutely. When I see who has lined up against, with the opponents, and I knew it. It's sad because, we definitely have a local party that's fractured. We also have, a national party that's trying to rebuild after a devastating loss. And I think that, the election of our current president has us all really reexamining our beliefs and, what we need to stand for as a community, and standing up for everyone here in our community is what's important.
I'm not sure one person can do everything to kind of move the earth and bring people together, but do you feel like you've fallen short in any way in bringing this Democratic Party together locally?
No, because you gotta be willing, and people have to be willing to meet you halfway. And, before I even decided to run 4 years ago, I was told by, a committee member, even if you win, you still won't be my mayor. And those same people were the ones that lined up to run even after I won the primary, a general election against me. That was from people that were in my own party, people that are actually still part of this party, and some of them are leaders. And so I think that it's sad that you have this situation where individuals that don't, that can't unite around our democratic beliefs. And, when I think about what happened even today at the JCC, there's so much going on. There's so much hate being spewed across our community that we really need to unite. I want to send my prayers and thoughts out to Supervisor Bill Maley and, the Jewish community here, because last week we had the gravesite that was damaged, and you constantly have people spewing this type of hate. And at times like this is when we really should be coming together, uniting against a common enemy, and trying to build everyone up instead of tear them down.
Now, you did primary a sitting Democrat 4 years ago, right?
Oh, yes, I did.
And so it happens.
Yes, it happens. And, at the end of the day, I did what I think that I needed to do. And there were some reasons why I did that. And I think that when we look at what the challenges were 4 years ago, and the fact that there was a completely lack of concern for certain parts of our community, I believe that someone had to stand up and someone had to, really speak on behalf of the entire, Rochester community and all of its citizens. And I did that. And I wanted to bring those two worlds together. And we're constantly focusing on doing that.
Are you essentially giving up on the idea of bringing this party together if you win over the next 4 years? Do you feel like they're not meeting you halfway, as you said, that it's not going to happen, or do you think that it could still happen?
No, I think that it can happen. And let me just say that, these, small group do not represent the entire Democratic Party. I believe in a democratic process, and I'm going to go through the democratic process. And you have a small group of people that have been in power and been in charge in the Democratic Party for a long time. And my candidacy, my win, threw them for a loop, because they have been dictating who should be successful and who shouldn't be successful for a long period of time. And so I think that, I believe it's Margaret Thatcher that said that sometimes you have to fight a battle more than once in order to win. And I think that that's where we're at right now. I'm hopeful that, we go through this process and we come together strong stronger as a community, as a Democratic Party, and I'm willing to work with anyone. I've sat down with our party chair on many occasions and said, listen, I really want to be helpful. I want to, come together as a party, and whatever meeting you want me to go to, however you want me to serve, I'm here. But I can't do it by myself. Mm-hmm. And, if there's a meeting of the minds, there has to be something where we all come together and do it.
Your big win, you can say, by the way. I mean, not that anybody was counting, but you were in the 60-what percentile in the primary 4 years ago, right? 62 or 3 or something?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
It's really about, fighting on behalf of all Rochesterians. And I believe that, this time, we'll do the same thing. We'll go and we'll talk to people and we'll talk about our record. And at the end of the day, the citizens of Rochester will decide again.
But do you expect to get the Democratic Party designation in this race?
I don't know. I don't know. And I think that I've represented not only our party well, but I believe that I've represented Rochester well. When I have been a lifelong Democrat, I have been campaigning and working on many campaigns across our city for many, many years. I have worked on both local campaigns and national campaigns because I believe in the democratic process and democratic values, and I will continue to do that. I'm not going to let a small group of people dictate what the citizens of Rochester want or feel, and at the end of the day, whether I get the nomination or not, we will have a primary.
All right, we're talking to Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren. We're on Facebook Live on WXXI News, so hello if you're watching there. You can call the program toll-free if you like, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. The mayor has said that the decision on Parcel 5 downtown is a major piece of Rochester's future. You had 4 bids, 4 proposals. Initially, we were told to expect a decision, fall into the winter. How come you haven't made a decision on Parcel 5 yet?
Well, this process is being led by the deputy mayor, and we have talked to the developers, and we are very, very close. But a big thing with any development, you want to make sure that it's right development, but you also want to make sure that you have the dollars to get it done. And here we're looking at, the financing, and that's what's taken a little bit of a challenge to make sure that that the developer has the financing to get the project done. And, that's what's important to our citizens.
It's not a done deal then right now.
No, we have a preferred developer that we're talking to, but the decision, of course, is around, do we have the financing lined up? And that's what we're, looking at right now.
So it sounds like you got 4 proposals. We like this one, but do you have the finances to get this done? If you can show that you do, the light's going to be green. Do you expect that to be within coming days, weeks? Are we close on that?
We're very close. And, we make a recommendation to City Council. And ultimately, City Council decides because they are in charge of the sale, lease, and purchase of land. So we'll make a recommendation to City Council, and we'll go from there.
Okay. Multiple times on this program, Arnie Rothschild of the Rochester Broadway Theater League has said that a downtown performing arts center, that there should be a performing arts center in the Rochester area. He'd love for it to be downtown, wanted it to be at Parcel 5. And that, I know that there are a lot of people who've kind of back and forth on that. Do you want to see a performing arts center downtown still?
I would love to see a performing arts center in downtown Rochester. I think that downtown is where it needs to go. I know that there is millions of dollars that the RBTL and their performances bring into the Rochester economy. And I think that we miss out on some of those shows, those great shows like Hamilton and other things because our theater is not up to par. I think that at the end of the day, we have to do what's best for all of the citizens of Rochester in evaluating these proposals that we have in. But I stand firm that a performing arts center in downtown Rochester is a place that I prefer to have.
All right. Is RBTL still in the running for Parcel 5?
Well, yes. All the proposals are still
technically
open.
In the running. Okay.
Okay.
So you haven't eliminated that as a possibility. If RBTL ends up going to the suburbs for a performing arts center, would that be a loss for Rochester?
I think that ultimately they have to decide what's their own business model and best for their business model. I think that, as I said before, Performing Arts Center in downtown Rochester is what I would prefer, because I think that the life and bread of our community is in our center city. You have a number of people, young people, millennials that are, you know, moving and choosing Rochester. People want to be in an environment where they could live, walk, bike to different events and different programs. But we have great theaters already in downtown Rochester that's providing, you know, great arts entertainment, like Jiva Theater. Black Friars is downtown as well. You have the Downtown Cabaret. You know, so you have great performances. And I still believe that RBTL being in downtown Rochester or a Performing Arts Center being in downtown is something that would be good for our city.
All right, let me grab our first phone call. Eddie in Rochester is first up with Mayor Lovely Warren. Go ahead, Eddie.
Hi, Mayor Warren. First of all, I want to congratulate you on a job well done, and I am a supporter of yours, but I just take issue a little bit with your use of the term sad when describing the fact that not everybody agrees with you, because I believe dissent is good and it makes you stronger. So, and I understand there are some elements of the Democratic Party that, you know, aren't supporting you, but there's many other people that just have a difference of opinion. So I just want to know if you could pick maybe a better word than sad. Because ultimate power corrupts ultimately, and that's so it's good to have a little dissent, I think.
All right, Eddie, thanks for the phone call, Eddie. Go ahead, Mayor.
Thank you, Eddie. I appreciate you sharing that. And let me classify what I say is sad. What was sad was after I won the Democratic primary, that there were people that were part of the Democratic Party in their leadership that ran a general campaign against me because their candidate lost. When you believe in the process and when you say you believe in the process, then, you know, remember, I've been around for a long time. So, you know, Mayor Bill Johnson, he ran a primary. He won the party rally behind him after he won the primary, and they moved on and they came together. When, you know, Mayor Duffy became mayor, he ran a primary against the Democratic candidate, Wade Norwood. And, you know, that was I was running for city council at the time. So I know that was a tough race and a very divisive race. But after Mayor Duffy won that, you know, we came together as a party and we got behind who the Democratic candidate was. But when I won the primary, there was an issue with those individuals that disagreed with me. And dissent is good. And so I'm not saying that that everyone has to agree with the position that I have. But I think that it is sad when you have your own party run a campaign against the person that the people of the city chose as their Democratic candidate.
All right, Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren, our guest, and one of your opponents is Rachel Barnhart, a longtime local journalist. She's proposed a 50% tax cut for city residents to bring Rochester more in line with other municipalities, make the city more attractive, she says, for business and more fair for struggling residents. And let me just start by asking you if you think that is a feasible idea and one that you would support.
I think that is unrealistic. When you look at, our tax rate, if you look at it, I believe that Rochester's tax rate is actually less than that of Buffalo and Syracuse per capita. When you also look at the fact that we are under a state mandate to provide $119.1 million to our city school district, and that means that basically about 70% of the taxes that we collect automatically go to our school district. That is not an option. That is something that the state has mandated us to do, and we have been providing those dollars since 2010, regardless of whatever fiscal situation the city of Rochester is in. And so when you have to provide for police services, when you have to provide for fire services, DES, 911, 311, all of these different recreation and services to our community, there's no way that this is a fiscally sound sound decision to cut taxes by 50%. We have been able to hold taxes flat for the last 2 years. And, you know, with property tax values and other things that are going up in our community. But I just think that it's unrealistic to say that you can cut taxes by 50%, because at the end of the day, something's going to have to give. You can't cut the school district's dollars. So the only other thing that you can be able to cut is essential services to your citizens. And believe me, when people call a police officer, they want one there. When they call for the fire department, they want one to show up.
But let me just jump in and say that she has said she could pay for it by maybe consolidation of water services, city and county. I read this morning that in a separate interview, you know, you were critical of that approach. I didn't hear it. I think you were on WDKX this morning with our colleagues over there. And here's what Rachel Barnhart tweeted in response to what she heard from you on WDKX this morning. She wrote, quote, Lovely Warren and Adam McFadden are comparing the Monroe County Water Authority to Flint, Michigan. It's irresponsible. The city trades water with MCWA. Water is safe, high quality, and less costly. Was it irresponsible to invoke Flint, Michigan?
No, it wasn't irresponsible, because what she's talking about, I never mentioned the Monroe County Water Authority. That's what she's saying. And so I guess that people should listen for themselves and not actually have people invoked what their thoughts are or provide.
But are we going to have a water crisis? We're not Flint, right?
No, we're not Flint. But let me tell you why this is unrealistic. A number of years ago, under a different administration, we looked at possibly selling our water system to Monroe County Water Authority. And at the time, it wasn't economically feasible for the citizens of Rochester to do that. There are a number of things that we are able to provide and opportunities that we are able to provide to our community and our business community, like what happened with the Genesee Brewery that's not too far from here. We were able to rework their water rates and other things to be able to save that business. Now, that was under Mayor Duffy. I was on city council. But had we not owned the water system, we wouldn't have been able to save those 400 jobs. And believe me, the Genesee Brewery would have left here. When we talk about privatizing the water system, that means that people, a lot of times when you privatize certain things, especially these types of resources that we have here in our community, you're looking at a short-term gain that can cause you long-term issues. And what I'm saying is that, yeah, you may think that this is a good idea. We looked at it. It doesn't work, and it's not good for the citizens of Rochester. And had she done her research properly, she would have known that.
You think it's naive?
Well, absolutely. Well, you have someone that has no governmental experience talking about cutting taxes by 50% and also selling off a water supply system. And let me tell you, the city of Rochester water is great water. We have been voted, number one in New York State. We have a great system that we have, and it's because we invest in that system with the support from the state. And we do work with the county water system, Monroe County Pure Waters, across the board. We've actually done a lot of consolidation with them, but actually selling our water system is not a fiscally sound thing to do, and it will have long-term implications to the citizens of Rochester.
One other comment she made in criticism of you and previous mayors, she says Rochester gets $200 less per person in state aid compared to Buffalo, and she says a long line of Rochester mayors have failed to make a dent on this issue. She says she would be a much stronger advocate for our city in state aid. I want to listen to some of what she said, and the Mayor Warren can respond.
Tom Richards and Lovely Warren were pretty muted about this issue, but I've also never, ever seen a mayor say that you're paying more in taxes because of this disparity, and I'm saying it, and you really can draw that line on the budget. You can look at Buffalo's budget, you can look at our budget, you can do the math, and it's almost the same amount, and it hits us in our wallets, and I think that is a really compelling argument.
All right. What do you think, Mayor?
Well, I think that, again, you have someone that has no governmental experience trying to tell, people that I have a background in government. I've worked in state government for a number of years. I have, if she would have listened to my testimony before the state legislature for the last number of years, I've talked about this disparity that, I know that this is something not only that Tom Richards have talked about, but Mayor Duffy has talked about as well, about the AIM aid and the disparity. We have actually called for the governor and the legislature to change the formula that they actually provide AIM aid at. But of course, at the end of the day, the state legislature are the ones that in the governor are the ones that decide aid to municipalities. It's something that we have consistently asked for, and we're not the only ones that's asking for it. Every major municipality across the state of New York is asking for AIM aid increases. And, you know, we have been able to get resources to the city of Rochester despite not having an increase in AIM aid. We last year got 2 years ago, we were able to get $6 million in additional unrestricted aid. Last year, we were able to get another $4 million in unrestricted aid. And plus the other of hundreds of millions of dollars we were able to get from the state in grants and other things to improve our community. AIM aid is just one source of funding that our state provides us with. And of course, we would want additional AIM aid, but you cannot talk about things that you don't know and you don't have any experience in.
Do you disagree with the premise that Rochester is getting shorted by the state compared to Buffalo?
No, absolutely. When you look at the AIM aid disparity, it is real. It's something that we've talked about consistently over the last couple of years, and it's something that we've advocated for, getting more resources. But instead of giving or changing the AIM aid formula, what the state has decided to do is they've given us additional unrestricted aid that they don't necessarily quote-unquote call AIM aid, but it's unrestricted aid that allows us to be able to provide the services that we're able to provide for in our community and our city.
All right, two very different emails. Tara says, 4 more years. Thanks very much to the mayor and send our best regards. We'll be voting for her. That's
Thank
from
you.
Tara. Michael, though, says, Mayor, you kicked out the homeless out of Sanctuary City in the middle of winter. You're letting the subway get filled in. You've put food trucks through the ringer. What have you done to prove you're for the people of Rochester and not suburbanites?
Well, that's interesting. When we look at what happened with the tent city, it was a miscommunication between two different departments. But what we have been able to do, and I've been a staunch supporter and advocate for a low barrier shelter. And actually in March or the end of March, we will be opening up that shelter and giving the House of Mercy a home, a permanent home. We have advocates that are going out basically weekly to talk to our chronically homeless to provide them with shelters or access to new housing and the shelters. And, you know, we've been doing that. I have been the only elected official that have really, pushed for this low barrier shelter and providing resources and support to them. They're able to get this done and get it done in a way that is, you know, nice for a nice place for our homeless people. And that will open up in March, at the end of March. And we're thankful for that. And we've been working on that for 2 years. And so, I understand people's concern about that tent city issue, but you know, it was a miscommunication between two separate
departments. Was that a mistake? What happened?
Well, I think that it was a miscommunication between two different departments on what was supposed to happen. But I'll take responsibility for it because ultimately it is my responsibility. And that's why I have worked very, very hard with our homeless advocates to make sure that they get the support and the resources that they need to provide for our homeless people. When we talk about, one of the other things that he brought up was food trucks. Food trucks is not under the administration's control. Actually, food trucks and what happens with food trucks is regulated by city council. So I think that he needs to do his research there. When we talk about what I've been able to do for the citizens of Rochester, one of the major issues, of course, that we talk about is barriers that our citizens face. When we talk about transportation issues to employment, we introduce van pools. We talk about access to capital that many of our entrepreneurs face when they're trying to start up a business or they're trying to expand their business. We brought Kiva Rochester area here. Yesterday I went to 4 different businesses where we were able to help those businesses either get out of their trunk of their car or their basement and actually have a home, a permanent home, so that they can grow their business and actually helpfully employ people. When we talk about working with Rochesterians about issues or barriers that they face, we introduced OTR, which is Operation Transformation Rochester, and EMTEP, which is a manufacturing training program that allows people that may have, you know, some issues with employment, get trained in manufacturing. And many of those individuals that have completed that program are actually working today. And we've transformed lives. I have many letters from these individuals that saying thank you very much. These investments are not in bricks and mortars. These investments are in the people of Rochester. One of the other things that we did, it was very important, was that people that were returning home from prison that needed support, we allowed them to actually go around, and you see on major corridors, they're picking up trash. We have a partnership with CEO and some of our other community organizations to be able to provide these individuals with a job to take care of their families so that they can get something on their resume to show some consistency in work, because we want people that want to turn their lives around. We want to give them that lifeline to be able to do those things. These are all things that we have done in the last 3.5 years. We talk about investment in our neighborhoods. We're talking about investments in not only the bricks and mortar, but the people. But let's talk about the bricks and mortar. Right now on Hudson Avenue, there's probably been over a decade, maybe 20 years before you had a new building actually go up on Hudson Avenue. Not only is our firefighter union building a new headquarters there, we're right down the street right now. It's fenced off. DePaul is building a major housing project there. The church is doing some things. Konia is doing some things. We have a daycare center that's going to be expanding over there, as well as Jordan Health Center. These are the types of investments and things that we talk about when we talk about neighborhoods. When we go over to Bull's Head, there was a cleaners there that was there for many years that was dilapidated, that needed to be demolished. We demolished that. We're doing land banking over there so that we can bring the type of development that we have on the southwest side to the northwest side of Genesee Street in the Bull's Head area. On Main Street, you'll have another housing development on East Main Street, where you have right next to RGRTA across the street, where you have some affordable housing so that people have some options in our community. So it's just not about investing in downtown. It's about our neighborhoods, and it's about our people.
Is there one thing in the last 4 years you're most proud of?
I think that the one thing that I'm most proud of is being able to increase preschool enrollment by 1,200%. We focused on our 3-to-3 initiative, working with the school district, working with our community providers. We have in talking to parents and said, listen, the best thing that we can do for our children is to get them enrolled in high-quality pre-K programs early on. And now our pre-K 3 and 4 enrollment has gone up by 1,200%. We also instituted a program where we're working with the Children's Institute and our providers in our school district to actually screen children for developmental delays early, because a lot of the developmental delays that they have, some of them can be turned around. So if they have a problem with eyesight, they're having a problem with hearing, they're having a problem with speech, if you get them the support that they need early on, then that is not something that they would have to deal with, or it can be reversed or changed in the coming years so that when they get to kindergarten, they have the background and the support that they needed early on. And so those are things that we have done to really focus on early education and working with our children.
All right, back to the phones. Frank in Rochester, next on the phone with Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren. Go ahead, Frank.
Yes, thank you for this program. Mayor Warren, you've been a proven leader on sustaining and updating the city's Sanctuary City Resolution. Thank you. On climate change, perhaps the greatest challenge for our community, you said in the DNC article on November 21st, quote, cities must take a leading role in confronting climate change regardless of federal policy. I have no doubt this is what our citizens expect of us and will allow us to lead by example on this crucial issue, unquote. Soon the city will unveil its climate action plan, a wonderfully comprehensive document about how Rochester intends to address this critical issue locally. Can you talk about the climate action plan and how you intend to lead on this issue?
Well, we're doing a lot when we talk about the climate and climate control. As you know, we're building a solar city. We have been working with our solar panel experts to actually have housing and individuals that are homeowners actually do solar panels on their homes so we can return more energy to the grid. We have introduced single stream recycling, where we have, where hopefully by the end of April we'll have all of our homes will have the blue boxes for recycling. We are also changing our vehicles so that they are green. You know, they are more efficient when it comes down to fuel and waste. We are also working with the state of New York to completely develop our 5-year action plan when it comes to climate control, with our water systems and everything else. And so that's just a number of different things in different avenues as far as recycling and green energy and providing for opportunities for our homeowners to have, you know, access to green energy. And we will continue to work with our citizens to bring gardening and green gardens and green roofs to our community, because I think that that's very important as well.
All right. Thanks for the phone call, Frank. Bonnie in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, hi. You know, one of the purposes of an election, especially a position like, you know, the mayor, and all of them really, is to have whoever's running and the community have a chance to hear ideas and to actually, you know, kind of rev it up, so that is one of the purposes, and because that's one of the ways you can get people to focus on some things. So I think it's really important. Also, you know, when you look at the national election, as we all know, there was a pretty strong disagreement with the two-party system, and, you know, the road that Bernie took was another indication of some changes that are needed. So I think that fits with what I'm saying now, is that when you have people come together and you have a discussion on ideas. So one suggestion might be to have a series of debates in which there would be, you know, the candidates who are running, and they would be on specific topics. So, for instance, and topics that aren't always necessarily just, you know, the downtown stuff gets talked about so much. So, you know, I would suggest one of the discussing a development in the neighborhoods and encouraging what ideas are we going to have. And also the funding of a lot of the stuff is a major, major issue. So throwing that out. Transportation. I realize we don't control all of transportation, but picking out topics and then having a debate among the people who are running. And also, because of the primary, the way we know with pretty much the one-party, two-party system is that primaries, by the time it gets to a primary, it's already, you know, who's going to win the election. So if we could do these things before the primary and really try to maximize this process rather than, we tend to continue to talk about the
sure.
same thing.
So let me jump in and just say, I appreciate the call. There's a lot to chew on there. I will also mention that on Friday at noon, the mayor's good friend Alex White will be on this program. He's running as once again on the Green Party line, and a local business owner and an activist. So we'll talk to Alex White on Friday. But Bonnie wants to see more debate. Are you up for more debate?
Oh, I have no problem talking to people and discussing what we have done for the city of Rochester and also what we plan to do. So I welcome the opportunity to have those talks.
And she's saying, you know, we hear a lot about downtown. We don't hear a lot about the neighborhoods. I know in the past on this program, you've defended your record on neighborhood development, saying you are very much in touch with the neighborhoods. What would you say to people like Bonnie who want to hear more about developing not just downtown?
I think that actually on this program today, I've talked more about neighborhood development than downtown. I think that we talked a little bit about Parcel 5, but, you know, the neighborhoods is the lifeline of our community and our city, and I believe that they're very important. So when we talk about development in every quadrant of our city, we are really talking about development in our neighborhoods and not necessarily in our center city. I can outline, you know, right now we are looking at Josana, you know, the Josana plan, master plan number 2, which is development of additional housing. One of the schools that is a beacon school is school number 17. That's in the middle of the Josana neighborhood. It's a school that we're investing resources and support to make it a true community school. You have a great principal over there that have great partners and really working to provide recreational opportunities for the children, but also support for the families that's there, in concert with the Farish Foundation. time. When we look again at East Avenue and East Main Street, we're looking at that development being a connection and a catalyst for what is happening at East High School, as well as school number three, at school number 33, I'm sorry. School number 33 has a, you know, recreation center and a library that's attached to it. And we're talking about development in that particular area. We talk about development in Northeast Rochester. We can talk about the investments in the Genesee Brew House and working in partnership with them, but also the neighborhood investment in on Hudson Avenue with Konia, but also looking at Clinton Avenue and development that we want to hopefully have at the La Marqueta site. And we talk about development in the Southwest. We've made a lot of investments in the neighborhoods there along Jefferson Avenue and Jefferson and Main Street. Going further down, we're looking at the development on Bull's Head and really land banking there so that we can have a nice development for the community there.
All right, so a lot to cover, and let's get our only break of the hour. If you're waiting on the phones, we'll try to squeeze in more of your phone calls. We'll also talk policing, education, and more with Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren, who is running for re-election here, talking to us on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, tomorrow is International Women's Day, and we have a preview from a wide range of angles, starting with the question of why women of color don't often enjoy the same benefits of progress that white women enjoy. We'll talk about criminal justice and the courts. And we'll talk about this effort to create a day without women in the workplace tomorrow. Is this the right idea? Would it send the right message? It's all next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Mayor Warren, one of your opponents is former Police Chief James Shepard, and he had some of his harshest criticism of you regarding a night last summer. Now, last July, Rochester police arrested dozens of people during demonstrations in support of the Black Lives Matter movement. And that night, there were about a dozen similar demonstrations, different cities around the country. Rochester did have one of the highest arrest totals, if not the highest. And while mayors in some other cities did join demonstrators, marching with them, or in one case, sitting with them in the street, talking to them directly, you stayed away from the scene, and Police Chief Simonelli told us there was a reason. He says he asked you directly that night, don't come down here. I can't guarantee your safety. I don't think it would help. And that was his request to you. So here's what former Chief James Shepard said about that.
Personally, I would not be afraid of our people. And I'd been down there on that avenue because, one, they would expect me to be there as the leader of the city. And two, I think it would have changed the dynamic of the interactions.
Okay, and you're saying if you had been mayor, you and the chief of police had said to you, Jim, tonight, I can't guarantee your safety, and I don't think it'll help if you're going to be down here. You're going to overrule that, and you're going to be down at the scene.
My entire existence in the city of Rochester, I've been afraid to go nowhere, and I would not be afraid to go anywhere in the city in the future.
The mayor didn't say she was afraid.
No, I'm not saying that, but I'm just speaking from my perspective that if the chief told me I don't want you to come, I'd say, listen, dude, I'm in charge here. You're going to walk with me, and we'll go down and talk to these people.
All right, that's James Shepard with some criticism of Mayor Warren from that night last summer. What would you say to what you heard from Mr. Shepard?
Well, I think that there's two things there. Number one, you have to trust your police chief. And part of it, you know, he's in command of the situation. And, you know, certain things happened that night that I was very critical of and we actually apologized for. And so we take responsibility for that. But in order to have a police chief that understands and knows that you believe in his leadership, then you have to be willing to listen to him. And I believe that Chief Simonelli, that night, that was what he asked me to do. And I listened to him. The second thing about this is that you have to look at what people have done. When Police Chief Shepard was the police chief, mm-hmm. There was a big Occupy Rochester protest where a number of people were arrested. And, you know, at that time, the people actually called for his resignation. The other thing you have to do is look at what people do when they're in office. At that point in time, James Shepard was actually a county legislator, and he represents that particular area. If he was very concerned about those protesters and what was happening, nothing precluded him from getting outside of his house and going down there and standing with those protesters. He didn't. And so he's in office as well. He's a legislator representing, I believe, that district, and he didn't show up. And no one told him not to go. No one, told him, listen, let me try to control this first and things like that. So I take responsibility for where responsibility lies. But I ask this community, you examine people's record, examine what they did and how they handled things when they were in charge, and then you tell me how to operate. The fact of the matter is that many mayors across the country are not going to overrule their police chief on certain issues when it comes down to safety or concern or a situation like that. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that that situation was handled 100% correctly. And I don't believe that the police chief would sit here and tell you that either. However, as the events outlined that particular night and things had transpired that were behind the scenes that no one had any control over. And I have to trust my chief on this. And that's exactly what I did.
Were there too many arrests that night?
For that night, when you see the arrest record, there were more white people that were arrested than black. I believe that there might have been about 42 white people, and I'm not sure the breakdown of black and Hispanic. I can't say that that the police department did something wrong in arresting so many people. What we have was a situation that got out of control that earlier that day, they had protested, they had walked, the police chief and his team thought that they were disbanding, and then, something got revved back up, and you had a situation that the police chief was calling and in command of the situation, and you trust him to make the right decisions. And I apologize for those things that happened that I disagree with. But
what's an example, by the way?
Well, the arrest of the reporters that were there. There were certain arrests where I heard about where people said that I was just going to a restaurant, and me and my girlfriend were walking through. We were told to get out of the street. We had nowhere to go, and we were arrested. We were detained. So you had situations like that happened that, you don't want to happen and could have been handled differently.
Okay. Drew in Rochester on the phones. Next up. Go ahead, Drew.
This is my first time hearing that the chief of police could not guarantee the mayor's safety. With all that equipment, those police officers... And the mayor is loved by a lot of people in this city. No harm would have came to her. So sometimes chief of police, I think mayors acquiesce to the chief of police decisions, and they're not always right. And in this instance, this one was not right. The mayor would have been safe down there at that protest, and for him to say that is a cop-out.
So let me be clear. I'm not afraid to go anywhere in our city. I think that, I go a lot of different places and people are like, are you really here? I wasn't afraid of going down there and being among our community and talking to people or anything like that. I think that what the chief was thinking about was that, of course, earlier that day there was a disband. Earlier that day, certain things was happening, and then there were times when people were actually throwing bottles, and not necessarily the protesters were throwing bottles. There were other people that were outside that were also throwing items and other things like that that he saw that said, you probably should stay away. Let us try to get this situation under control. And so I think that that's literally what he was talking about. But I'm not afraid to go to any part of this city and be a part of any initiative or anything that's happening in our community. I think that James was talking about, I think that he's wrong. And as I said earlier, he could have, as a county legislator, gone down there in his district and tried to help the situation since he would have known what was best, and he didn't. And I think that that's a testament to someone that talks about things but does nothing.
How do you rate his work as police chief?
I think that, and let me say, when he was police chief, we worked together on a number of different initiatives. We worked together on, diversity initiatives and other things like that, that was important. But I think that he had a different style of policing, and I think it was heavy-handed, and I think that it was a disservice to our community as a whole, and it actually damaged the relationship between the police department and the community. And I think consistently there are things that he said that he did that were wrong and that was heavy-handed, that did not need to be done that particular way. When you're stopping people riding on a bike for not having a bell, when you're, you know, stopping grandmothers that might have something wrong with their vehicle, when you're constantly just targeting an entire community because of where they live, that's a problem. You have to go after the problem people. And I think that that is consistently what we have done here. And that is why I believe that we've brought our Major One crime levels to a 30-year low. I believe that that's the reason why shootings have been down. I believe that that is the reason why, you know, you have a number of our investigators actually holding people accountable, arresting people for the crimes and murders that they commit in our community and our city. Now, are we where we want to be? No. But do we have a long way to go? We have a ways to go? Absolutely. You don't want to lose any lives in your community. And so, but I do believe that we are on the right track, that we're building a relationship between the police department and our community through programs like Clergy on Patrol, through programs like the police reorganization and other things that we're doing, Brooks and Bears, and trying to work to really build that relationship so that we can attack the problem people, hold them accountable, while letting the other people in a neighborhood be able to live.
Ryan emails the program, a listener named Ryan, to say, how can violent crime numbers be down, but murder, rape, and robbery are up? What exactly constitutes violent crime?
Well, he would have to talk to the police chief directly about that. But rape is not up and robbery is not up. We did have murders that were that number was 42 last year. And we had three incidences where there were multiple people that unfortunately lost their lives. In January of last year, we had the Layton Street homicide where we had four people. I believe it was in August. We had a mother along with her two children that lost their life. And then at the end of the year, we had a mother and a daughter that was allegedly killed by the husband who has been arrested. And so when you look at those three incidences where you had nine people that were that lost their lives, then you have a situation where that's why murders were up. And when you look at the number of incidences, then you have the number of incidences were actually down. The numbers of shootings were actually down. And so this time last year, we had, I believe, nine people that were actually killed in our city. And this time now we have two. Any death is tragic to a community and it's heartbreaking. And we, you know, pray for the victims and their families and we want justice to prevail and hold individuals accountable. And we will continue to work at building those relationships and giving people hope so that they don't choose to actually end lives or make those tragic decisions that will cause them to be in prison possibly for the rest of their life.
All right, trying to work quickly through the rest of the hour. One of your opponents, James Shepherd, has said he would support, if it was politically feasible, a countywide school district. He thinks it's probably not politically feasible, so he wants to see more magnet schools. What do you think about that kind of a proposal?
Well, we are already working on Great Schools for All is something that I talked about, so I thank him for giving me credit for that. But Great Schools for All is working on developing magnet programs for anyone that wants to go, you know, from the city school or county school into a magnet program. I've been talking to them about that. As everyone knows, I support school choice. I support options for parents to be able to provide the best possible education for their children, and I'll continue to do that. It's the reason why we focused on early education. It's the reason why we've talked about supporting our school district as well as the children in our community and providing them with opportunities.
Okay. Mary in Rochester, keep it really tight. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi. I have a question for Mayor Warren about her focus on big business development within the city. I personally have lived in South Wedge, and now I live across from East High School. And I see negatively how that's affecting the fiber of neighborhood. And it just seems like these big development companies are getting tax breaks at the expense of the citizens. So I'd like to...
Can you expound upon that?
Pardon me?
Can you explain what you mean by that? Your question. I don't understand your question. When you say that big business development, what exactly are you talking about?
Okay, so in South Wedge, they're building like luxury condos everywhere. They're ripping up like beautiful historic buildings and they're putting in condos that most of the residents can't afford. I know friends who have moved into those condos and they get long-term tax breaks. They pay on a graduated level. So that negatively affects the amount of money that goes into the citizens. I would love to see more focus on developing arts, humanities, and small neighborhood and community-based building as opposed to luxury high-rises and things like the propositions for Parcel 5 and closing in the Interloop.
All right. Mayor, I got to let the mayor respond. Go ahead, Mayor.
So I appreciate Mary's question, but I think that, you know, her reasoning is flawed. Many of the development, especially in the South Wedge, when you look at what's happening on South Avenue, especially on South Clinton Avenue, many of those apartments are affordable housing, especially at the corner. The Pathstones is building a new development. That's affordable housing, and we're trying to break up the concentration of poverty. There's been a number of investments in the South Wedge area for new businesses and for those smaller businesses that are currently there. To actually expand and to grow, and many of them are being supported with the city support. We have given out small business loans. This is what we talk about with Kiva Rochester. Really, those smaller businesses that are unbankable getting resources and the support that they need. We've given over $100,000 out in that particular program, and continuing to do more with that. So I think that people try to mix the two, and it's completely separate. The fact of the matter is that people want their communities to be built up. Right now, if she says she lives by East Main Street, we are actually getting ready to working with Nelson Lee House and Home Leasing to do a development on East Main Street, a housing development that is going to be affordable as well as some hopefully market rate apartments there for the community as a whole. You can't want development to happen and not have a public-private partnership. The developers are the ones that are able to come in and build up and be able to make those investments in any community. And we look forward to working with everyone, but you don't have to take from one in order to give to the other because the needs are completely different. And you don't have to take from major developments to invest in neighborhoods because the money comes from a different source.
You can do everything?
Absolutely, and
we
have.
You can do a wide range. Mayor Warren has been talking about her record and her outlook for what another 4 years would be like. And boy, the hour just melts very quickly.
Yes, it does.
Mayor Warren, I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
And I know our listeners appreciate it. And it's a long way to September and November, so we'll see you plenty more.
Absolutely.
That's Mayor Lovely Warren running for re-election. Our thanks to all the listeners. The questions, get as many as we could in. And on Facebook Live, thanks for watching there. Short break and more connections is next. Okay.